Welcome, one and all, to the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm not Sherry Coolidge. I'm Burl Love, editor of The Enquirer, but Sherry Coolidge is here. I took over the intro duties today because Sherry is worn out, everybody. I have to tell you, she has been working nonstop since yesterday as we record now, because we've had one of the biggest stories finally, I won't say resolve, but a major development in the saga that is the City Hall corruption scandal of 2020. And 2 years later now, we have a sentencing.
We did. P.G. Sittenfeld was sentenced on federal corruption charges yesterday to spend 16 months in prison. I did think that it was going to be a little bit more closure than we saw at the hearing. And so we are going to talk about that kind of here at the beginning. But we do have special guests today.
We do have special guests near and dear to my heart. It is October. It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. As we mentioned before, I'm doing Real Men Wear Pink again. And we're bringing in the person who started this movement in 2016, this effort to get men engaged in breast cancer awareness and fundraising through the American Cancer Society. Her name is Jeanette Altano. She is, if you think you're woman about town, Sherry, like Jeanette is woman about town. She's incredible how much she does in this community. And this is her big volunteer effort, leading this charge, recruiting guys like me to join the campaign. And along with Jeanette, we have two guests. We have your good friend and mine, the mayor of the Banks, Jim Mooring.
Yes.
Why do we have Jim Mooring here? Well, why not? It's always fun to talk to Jim.
I know.
But he is partnering with the Enquirer as part of Men Wear Pink to host an event October 25th called Paint the Grail Pink to just continue that awareness, have a bunch of fun, raise a bunch of money. So we're going to talk about that event with Jeanette and Jim. Now back to PG. You said there's no closure. I think what you're alluding to is the fact that while he has the time to put together an appeal, not to the sentencing, but to the conviction, he's likely going to be
so there's three
at home.
First, let me set the scene for you.
Let's set the scene.
So it is one of, I have been saying this and I don't mind saying it here again, one of the biggest moments in Cincinnati city history to see P.G. Sittenfeld in a federal courtroom being sentenced on corruption charges. I mean, he was supposed to be the next mayor. Every story says that. Everyone who's listening here knows that. We've talked about it here. But to actually see that moment, he was surrounded by his family and many supporters.
Many.
I don't cover federal court on a regular basis, but that there was almost 100 people in the courtroom. It was standing room only. The judge allowed some people to sit in the jury box. There was an overflow room. People were sitting in the jury box of that courtroom's overflow. Like, it was just a lot of people. A lot of them were supporters. And PG did speak. And it was, he stopped short of apologizing. His appeal is going to be predicated on the fact that he does not believe he committed a crime. So that probably was a very difficult line to walk there. Of course, a judge does want to hear that. There's no question in any case.
Right.
They do.
Well, I mean,
they
that's just legal advice right there, that if you are maintaining your innocence, you are appealing a conviction, an apology could be used to imply admission of guilt. So that, I'm sure, was very carefully scripted, but he did say he learned a lesson, that he was too ambitious, got ahead of his, he did, not his words, but ahead of his skis a little
fast.
Bit.
He said he moved too fast
right.
As a young person. I mean, I did.
What a good reminder, too. You know, a young elected official. He was the youngest person ever elected to city council at the tender age of 27. And by the time he's in his 30s, he's mayor apparent.
No, and that would have been certainly some story to tell. And honestly, I never felt like, oh, I was dealing with a young person. PG, he knew the city inside and out. He knew what he was doing. And you would see him, you know, he would know all the things about issues. It was not ever like glossy or cursory or like, oh, you know, he could, you could call him up on any issue that was going on in the city and he would know what was going on and have the answers for you. And so never really thought of him as like, oh, the youngest council member.
Right.
I thought of him as someone who would usually had the answers.
Right. So back to the timetable, this ever.
Okay. So there's three things
ever
happening
increasing
here.
Timetable.
So that he did. He does speak. He cried when he was speaking. He had to have a long pause. It caused many, many people in the courtroom. I would say almost everyone except for the reporters to cry themselves. People were like bringing tissues out of their purses. I mean, this was really emotional.
And but I think you did a great job of capturing that in your story, where he talked about, you know, the pause this put on his career, his political aspirations, allowed him to be more present as a husband, more present as a father. And that's what he had done. And really, you know, I won't say begged, but asked the judge to consider that in the sentencing.
The judge did. The judge seemed very touched. PG did write a letter. Those letters are going to be made available to the public later this week. And so we'll get to actually see the whole letter. The judge referred to it, though. He said it was very compelling of self-reflection that he doesn't often see. So I'm looking,
right.
You know, I'm interested to really read what that says. But we left it at, so 16 months, you know, you can look at it both ways. It's less than a lot of people thought that he would get, and it's certainly below sentencing guidelines, but it is still a prison sentence. So that's really kind of hard to like wrap your head around what was really happening in there. It's like it's less prison sentence
right.
than maybe even he probably thought, mm-hmm. but it's still prison.
Well, I mean, it was somewhat of a question leading up to the sentencing yesterday on whether it would start right away, whether he would.
So this is where we left it. We have three things coming up, which I thought, you know, normally at this stage you have your appeals. And what happens there is that, you know, honestly, both sides could appeal things. But, you know, generally the defendant appeals things. And that is a very long process that goes to the Sixth Circuit. And I expected that to happen. That has to happen within 14 days. So we'll be kind of, I'm sure they're already writing those. So, like, you know, you're not like, oh, no, we have to appeal this. No, that process
right.
already
they
started.
Were ready.
Yeah. We heard those arguments in the post-trial motions. Anyway, that has to happen within 14 days. But two other things happened. PG, his attorneys and himself requested that he remain free during those appeals. So there is a process. So the judge could have said yes or no.
Right.
Just sitting there. But what he agreed to do is this process. He set a reporting date to federal prison of December 1st. And he's allowing PG to remain free on some sort of bond. I feel like it's like a recognizance bond. That is like one figure I don't know off the top.
Right.
But he's not fleeing, so it doesn't really
right,
matter.
Yeah.
Remain free while he asks the Sixth Circuit if he can remain free during his appeal. This kind, what's happening in this case, whatever is like kind of set forward and all the paperwork and everything, did call for him to be immediately remanded to prison. But the judge is willing to let him ask the court in this very special speedy process. Now everyone, like both sides in the courtroom, were a little doubtful that it was happening by December 1st, but the judge is like, they'll understand that this is needs
right.
to be resolved quickly.
And just for clarification, this isn't appealing the sentence. This is going back to appealing the conviction.
Well, no, what's happening in this speedy process is he's just requesting that the Sixth Circuit allow him to be out while he appeals.
He appeals.
That's like one single question. Can he remain free while he appeals this? It's going to be
while the appeal is, and we're talking about for the original conviction, like that's not resolved yet. He and his legal team are still hoping to get a favorable verdict in a request to have this appeal, correct?
They're hoping for a favorable, like to be overturned in appeals.
Yes.
That's what they want. That's a long process though. But this little short process, should he remain free, mm-hmm. is similar in that both sides are going to they have to make a request, then it'll get rolled to Sixth Circuit.
It's another
like
hearing.
Three panel judges, probably be briefs. It could be a hearing,
yeah.
but both sides will have to be brief and explain themselves. And then there might be more explaining after that. So there's going to be a lot of really things happening there. But there is, okay, so that's the second, the actual appeal, this short process to remain free. And there's yet another issue that's unresolved, which is, well, 16 months did seem like it was below the sentencing guidelines. What was a surprise was there was a $40,000 personal fine.
Right.
That PG does have to pay. And, you know, the judge, as part of the sentencing report, which is actually not a public record, the judge is actually being kind and allowing these letters out into the public, but he did not have to do that. The Inquirer did make the request through our attorney, Jack Reiner, and he said yes before the hearing yesterday. But sentencing reports are not public record, but PG's financials are all included in there. And the judge did have a window into what that all looks like. I'm sure this case was very expensive for him. He has very high-powered attorneys, one of them from Washington, D.C. So he has that fine. Additionally, he has been asked, he has to like give back. So PG got $40,000 from taxpayers, the U.S. government, in everything. But $20,000, and it went into his political action committee, which is a federal political action committee. So the federal government kind of has a lot of guidelines over that money. So he has, but he was only convicted on $20,000 of it. And he has, and he's been told he has to pay back $20,000 of that money. But it's a personal repayment. He cannot take the money, still in the pack. In fact, he tried to send the money back to the government.
Right.
And they're like, you just can't, it doesn't work. It's just like all these rules and regulations. He tried to give the whole $40,000 back. It is just sitting there. Yeah. You know, he didn't spend it. He didn't, you know. So, but now the question is, the prosecutors are like, no, no, this is a personal, another $20,000. And, but PG's attorneys are arguing that it has to come out of the pack. And so the judge, everyone's trying to make these esoteric, like in the middle of everything about why it should or shouldn't be. The judge is like, you know what? We're going to discuss that next week. They're like, you both sides can explain this to me in briefs and like put forward their arguments, but we're not doing this right now. Another one of the prosecutors, like on someone on their team, stood up and he's not now. Not now. So there's like three processes. So we'll hear what's happening with that next week.
All right. Well, so is it safe to say that the earliest he would have to be in prison would be December 1st?
Correct.
All right. Well, I'm sure we will be talking about this more as we work our way through the year.
How could we not?
How could we not? So let's shift gears. Let's bring in Jeanette and the mayor of the Banks and talk about the event.
I love that plan.
Let's do it. All right. Okay, here we are on special guest time of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. As mentioned, we are here with the mayor of the Banks, Jim Mooring, proprietor of the Holy Grail, and then, of course, the special guest of all times, I think, Jeanette Altano, who is, she does a lot of things in town. She handles public affairs for TriHealth, but I know her as the driving force behind, I know I'm still going to say Real Men Wear Pink, even though officially we're just Men Wear Pink. I don't know what we're going to be called next. But we have a lot to talk about today. So we're going to start with you, Jeanette.
I know that no one can see us. But how did I not wear pink today? Yes, I had a busy day yesterday, as we talked about.
Right.
But I did not wear pink today. With Barbie over the summer, you know which pink clothes I have? I'm going to fix that next week and like in the coming days, I'll
fix
that.
You have pink nail polish on there.
Oh, that's true. I do. Yeah. Okay.
So how did this start? How did you, an organization called Men Wear Pink, run by a woman named Jeanette, how did you get involved?
Yeah, I mean, it actually does blend in with the It's So Cincinnati kind of thing, right? So American Cancer Society had started this in another city. They had tried it. And the idea was to get a group of men who, by wearing pink, demonstrated their passion for advocating on behalf of women they cared about. So family members, colleagues who were in a battle with cancer. And it was very successful in the city they tried it in. They wanted to expand it, and Cincinnati was one of the cities that they looked at started expanding it to. And they spent the summer of 2016 looking for a male leader, because the model was a male leader leading men, advocating on behalf of women. And as we got closer and closer to the month of October, which is the goal, was to have it start by October 1st, they had not identified a male leader in the city who would start it. There was no model. There were no men lined up. There was no fundraising strategy. You just were asked to go and create this project. And so about mid-September, I asked who they ended up getting to lead it. And in September of 2016, they said we were going to wait. Cincinnati wasn't going to participate because we couldn't find someone to lead the program. And so on a whim, walking to an elevator, I said, well, if you ask them if a woman can lead it, I'll lead it in 2016, set it up, and then a male leader, corporate leader, can take over next year and really expand it. And that was the start of Real Men Wear Pink in Cincinnati. National had asked us to raise $10,000 to find four men who were willing to raise $2,500 each. And that year we raised, starting October 1st, we raised $120,000 against an objective of $10,000. So whenever anybody asks about it, it's such a great story for Cincinnati that against an objective of $10,000, we raised $120,000 to advocate on behalf of cancer warriors and survivors.
And now you have ambassadors, Real Men Wear Pink ambassadors, who have individual goals of 10,000 or more. Is how much the program has grown.
Our leading fundraiser right now is at about $25,000.
And we know who that is. Let's pause on that for a moment. So John Fay, the late John Fay, who for years covered the Cincinnati Reds for the Enquirer, has been an ambassador for Real Men Wear Pink. And posthumously, because his family and supporters in the community, he had started fundraising before he died, have carried on his mission. And, you know, in the shape of individual donations, they had a pickleball tournament in his honor. And he's ahead of everybody right now. And he's also honorary chairman. So
I'm not surprised. Of course, I'm not. I have faith in you, though, Burl.
Well,
he's charging up there.
Jeanette doesn't know this yet, but I don't think I'm going to approach that. If I do, I'm going to shut mine down, and everything's going to get driven into John's, because John is going to win this, is going to be the top ambassador come hell or high water.
He has been the top in the past, though, correct?
He has. And we lost two of our leaders. Last year's campaign ended in November 1st. And since then, we lost John and Dr. Odell Owens, were both members of our campaign and true leaders in advocating on behalf of early detection and early treatment. And so I think all of us look at it like we've got two extra angels watching over our campaign this year, and it's made it very, very special.
So I want to go back to your involvement, what you've learned. But what's fun about this campaign is that even if you're not directly involved in it, as I've been involved, people have stepped up, asked how they could help. And that's where the mayor of the Banks comes in. I was pondering, I had this like idea in the shower that, you know, what if we did like, you know, the Enquirer and the American Cancer Society figure out some kind of event, but what would that even look like? And then I bumped into you and—
As happens.
I mean, you are the mayor of the Banks. Does anyone else call you that besides me?
No.
I mean, I've said it in stories. People do say that.
I wanted to stick.
He's just being modest.
I just want to be an advocate for down there and for the entire
and
city.
You were the Holy Grail was the
first business to open, 2011.
When the Banks development phase one.
I'm so old.
I know. And not only the first, you're the long lasting survivor. If you don't know the Holy Grail, all you have to do is Google a picture of opening day Cincinnati, and you see millions of people surrounding
it is quite the
your bar
affair.
Trying to get in.
Yeah.
Or go on my social media, whichever.
Or anybody's social media.
Okay. So wait, did we already say what we did? What you're planning, or do we get off?
No,
that
here
already?
We go. Right. Here we go. So I just like threw this idea out, and then all of a sudden we're doing it because you're gonna have to bleep this, Phil. But Jimmy Moe's motto is "Let's f-ing go."
Yep.
LFG. So sorry, now you have post production work to do. We try to avoid that. and here we are, October 25th. at the banks. We're going to paint the banks pink. Not literally, but it's going to look pretty pink. And all I did was say, gosh, this would be great to do this. And then Jim and Jeanette, just the J's, I just realized that, the J's. The J's kind of took over. And now talk a little about what we're doing.
So first and foremost, thank you for getting us involved. My wife got hit by cancer, breast cancer, this past year. Went through a surgery, went through chemotherapy. Long-term prognosis is great. She fought her way through it. But as soon as you approached me about something like this, we eagerly jumped on it. So on October 25th, we are going to hold an event from 5 to 8, benefiting specifically the American Cancer Society, correct?
Real Men Wear Pink, yeah.
Real Men Wear Pink in Burl's name. So... put you on the spot.
My
there.
Campaign, yeah.
Your campaign,
it all goes to the same.
It does. It does.
Right. So talk about being humble. Burl's being pretty humble as well. So we have secured bonds. Bronson Royal is going to come down, play some music. We've got some live auctions. It should just be a really, really fun day, a really, really fun afternoon celebrating those folks who are survivors and those folks who are not, and to try to raise as much money as we can.
That's beautifully said.
I think if people haven't had the opportunity to see Bronson play, he's played out around town a little bit. You know, happens to be a Reds Hall of Fame pitcher, but also active in the community. Thanks to Jeanette, I had the opportunity to go to the Hall of Fame gala this year, and he stole the night performing. And when I reached out to him, he didn't even hesitate. He said, "Tell me what time to be there. And as long as I, you know, don't have another commitment, I will be there." So he's going to be there playing. And we have some other surprise, you know, Cincinnati celebrities. Everybody's a celebrity in Cincinnati. Guests that will be there. I mean, the one and only Sherry Coolidge will be there.
I have to tell you, when you're when you run a podcast, as we kind of do as a trio, with Burl's executive assistant, Lisa Gillespie, the glue that holds this place together, I'd never be remiss. I don't know what I would do without her. Cincinnati's short on very famous celebrities.
Yes.
It's really kind of crazy. I mean, we have like our people, Nick Lachey and George Clooney, who's impossible to get a hold of, P.S.
Yeah, he is our dream podcast guest. So if anybody has connections to George Clooney.
But anyway, yes, we're a little bit short on like the big, huge
celebrities.
We had
Emilio Estevez on the podcast.
We did. And that was very exciting.
Yeah. But anyway, so it's been fun working with the
is
two
the
of you.
Is the whole banks being painted pink? How are we doing
No, just the Holy Grail. Other okay. folks are going to jump in, but okay. we are specific to us that night. We didn't know how to branch it out and try to spread the thing around to everywhere. So it'll be specifically to the Grail that night.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and I don't even think I had a chance to tell you this. I was at the same wedding Sherry was at and the same wedding Jim was at this weekend.
Congratulations, Jill.
Congratulations,
yes, congrats,
Jill.
That's so Cincinnati.
That's why Sorry, I didn't everybody. Call you back this morning. I had to do the podcast to write a story.
But someone you know very well came up to me and said, "Oh, I heard about what you guys are doing at the banks." And I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "Well, did you talk to the Reds about turning the lights pink yet?" And I was like, "No, but that's a great idea." And she's like, "Handled. I'll take care of it."
That's
so
awesome.
People just hearing about this stepping up. So it should be a fun time. So, Jeanette. As I've worked with you and attended some of these events that we put together, it never fails to get me right in the gut. Like, I think I've heard everybody's why story. I have my own why story. Every year, as I'm involved with this, I have new reasons to do this, unfortunately, because people keep getting diagnosed. Last year, it was your wife, Jim. This year, a colleague of ours at the Enquirer, who happens to, she writes entertainment. Her name is Lou Anne Gibbs. She writes entertainment stories for us. She does the thankless job of compiling all these event roundups. And she compiled, as she does every year, all the list of October breast cancer awareness-related events. And the introduction to her roundup this year is her personal story about her diagnosis. And so I'm doing it for Luann this year as well. Is that what drives you? Tell me a little bit about why you've done this so long.
Yeah, I mean, I would, in a word, it's the men. It's the men who lead this work. The Real Men Wear Pink is such an incredibly special cohort of individuals. From the first year where, you know, I called a few friends and thought, okay, I'll find a few people and we can raise $10,000, to where we are today, $1.6 million later, money that's all gone to supporting either current cancer patients, patients that we know we'll find in the future, and research, because we do know as healthcare leaders in my role, both at TriHealth and on the board for American Cancer Society, we know that the best way to positively affect outcomes is to catch the cancers earlier and address the problem on the front end so that the problem doesn't get to be such a big challenge and that we can have better endings. And so these men, it's exactly what you said. They come to this project with unique whys. Maybe it's a family member, a mother, a wife, a daughter, a sister, a colleague that they've lost, and every story is painful. It's an incredible blessing in my role professionally that I get to be a part of those stories and I get to hear what motivates them to participate. And like, there's so many different kinds of cancers. There's so many different stories about how they get to be a part of this team. And then the way that they bring in friends, like you bringing in Jimmy and making them part of this team effort. So while we might only have 28 men in our campaign this year, they all have partners, right? And they bring their unique talents and their beautiful stories. And from the first day Jimmy shared his story with me, you know, you became a part of our project and you became a part of our team. And there's a history of that since 2016. I say it all the time. Each one of these men are individually amazing. And you put them together, and it's the honor of a lifetime to lead, literally to lead this project since 2016. And they come up with creative ways. We have somebody who has a pink gorilla costume and goes around and visits office sites for fundraisers. And then we have things like what you're doing. Yeah.
That would be Dan Wallace,
I did not know
former
this.
Project manager working at the Enquirer.
You should invite him by for Wednesdays.
You know what? We should have him come in. But then I'm facilitating his camp. I'm just kidding. No, we totally should bring him in here.
But the whys are so important.
They are.
Because one of my whys is for Jim's wife, who I am close to.
Yeah,
you make me cry in the podcast 2 times in 1 year, bro. Come on.
I'm Barbara Walters.
Yeah, way to go.
I make people never cry. When Jason was here today. But you want to help and you don't know what to do.
Yep.
And this is the thing you can do.
And it can be the smallest things, right? We all can't write a $1 million check. We all can't open up our amazing facility and someplace like Holy Grail and invite everyone in. But we can all do things. The men that lead this campaign have every role in life. They own their own businesses. They own restaurants or they're fire police chiefs or they're media, you know, experts, or they lead companies. They do all different things and they find different ways to get that message out. And what we can do as individuals in supporting them is to support that work, to recognize. I look at it like, you know, the saying, everything that, you know, is important can be measured. What's important is the conversations that we're having right now around awareness. It's so easy post-pandemic to realize that you forgot to get back that screening routine. And the more that these men have those conversations with people they love, and those appointments get scheduled and outcomes are better, the way we can measure that is as you have those conversations to donate to their campaigns. And I know it sounds cliche, but every $5 matters. You skip a cup of coffee this afternoon or skip a beer, not from Holy Grail. This weekend.
Not on the 25th because we're donating it back.
We want you to drink extra beer that night.
And let me pause there. When I went to Jim and said, you know, I was looking for primarily a place, you know, to host it. And I said, what's the possibility of, you know, a certain beer or a certain drink where the proceeds of that would go? And he's like, oh, no, all the proceeds that night are going to go. So this isn't a, you know, the Holy Grail is trying to grab, you know, some free marketing or whatever. All the proceeds that night. So every beer, every soda, every auction item. Nobody's getting paid that night. It's all going to the American Cancer Society.
And that it's a tremendous opportunity for us to get that messaging out. And the money is important, and the money that we can invest in research, $1.6 million. I was talking to someone the other day and said, I realize now the money that we raised in 2016 has already funded research that is in place now in our community. I mean, what an ROI on, you know, we can all be a part investor in this success. So it's $5 here, $20 here, or if you can give more, that's great. But that money can be invested with your dollars and your dollars. And all of a sudden, you have a real force behind research and changing outcomes for patients.
Well, I think after you literally go through a chemotherapy or a surgery, you start realizing that we're lucky. You know, we were lucky that, you know, I look at these single moms and the folks that, you know, are in blue collar jobs that are moving around. You know, Cincinnati police chief was in and I was talking to her. She was asking me how my wife was doing. And we started talking and, you know, they have, I think, 5 women officers right now who have breast cancer. And you start collating that and you start compounding the stories upon stories. And it's daunting to stare at sometimes when you're looking at it. And you see that it truly has reached almost, not almost, I think every person that I know. And the more you can do now.
Interesting snapshot. So we have 27 to 30 men a year, right? We've been doing this since 2016. 3 men that joined this campaign and wanted to be Real Men Wear Pink leaders have had spouses diagnosed with significant cancer cases since we started. They joined this project with no connection, no personal story. Their why was a more, you know, widespread commitment. And 3 of them, and one of them we've lost. And so it just shows you, like you said, it's affecting all members and all areas of our population. And we're so close to finding so many cancer breakthroughs that this is something that we can all get behind. We can finish this. Like, we can finish this research. We can get to a cure. And the cancers are related. So you find that what works for addressing one cancer can work to address other cancers. And so by investing in these amazing men and supporting their work, that they give up all of this time for 30 days, they're out, you know, they're running their organizations during the day, and then they're out at night engaging and spreading this messaging and working with friends like Jimmy to put out this evening, which will be amazing fun, but it's also the power in together collectively what we can do in Cincinnati to change outcomes.
That's the part that I had to learn in the last 3 years, because when I first started doing this, I was thinking, okay, this is a fundraiser. I got to bear down and raise some money. But that's almost secondary to me now. It's the conversations that I get involved in. I'm kind of socially awkward at times. Sherry's rolling her eyes.
Right.
No.
But I would have a hard time having a conversation with a woman in my life, a friend, a sister, mm-hmm. or whatever, to say, have you got your mammogram? I don't anymore. You know, it feels like I put pink on. I feel like the superhero, like I can talk about this and not be awkward about it. And that's the part that that I realize is the secret sauce to this, is that does.
That's amazing, because I'm telling you, I'm seeing the same thing right now. As soon as people, you know, realize what's going on, talking to folks. Yeah, my wife had it 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And folks that I had no idea.
So the awareness, the early screening, and then the excitement that, you know, we're now getting in the research past, you know, treatment to prevention, you know, research on vaccines for certain types of cancer strains that could significantly reduce the number of people each year that get diagnosed. These are important conversations that people need to be aware of. So, all right, well, we could talk about this forever, but Sherry, do you need a tissue?
I'm all right.
You're all right over there?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I assume, because you are the mayor of the banks, and Jeanette, you just know everybody in town, that you guys had met. So when we got together to start planning this event,
this is unbelievable,
at the Holy Grail, I'm like, wait a minute, you guys don't know each other? No, I've never met you, Jim. Good to know you. Heard about you, blah, 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 blah. So we start talking about, you know, the event and everything. And then I don't know which one of you said, so are you from around here? Where'd you grow up?
That was me.
That was you.
Yeah.
Now take the story from here.
So I asked Jeanette, where'd you grow up at? She said, the West Side. I said, we're out on the West Side. I grew up on the West Side. She said, I grew up in Delhi. I said, Delhi. I lived in Delhi. Where'd you live in Delhi? She said, huh? I said, I grew up on Alamore. She said, I grew up on Hibernia. We literally have never met. We're within 2 or 3 years of each other. And we grew up less than a half mile from each other.
And then own homes.
Yeah.
Later in our lives.
Yeah.
Where I had to drive past his street to get to my street.
Yeah. I had a practice wife.
It happens. We all have those.
So you talk about that. So Cincinnati.
Q, what do we call this?
What?
A, that's so Cincinnati. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. You talk about that's so Cincinnati. And it's been amazing to talk to folks since then. And when I say, hey, you know, here's what we're doing on the 25th. Well, is Jeanette involved? Like, how have we never met? It is absolutely unbelievable. And it's been a fantastic experience. And to Sherry's point, Lisa Gillespie has been absolutely amazing. So thank you all. It makes our lives a lot easier, that's for sure.
That's the magic of putting everybody together, yeah. Right? Everybody brings some special talent to the equation, and it's magic.
All right. So we want to see everybody at the banks on the 25th.
You guys, come out to that, all right?
I'm going
to
come. Happy hour.
I'm going to come to support the cause, but you know we are going to be at that point. Like 2 weeks before the election, and we have a big political audience here. You guys, You come out, and I'll talk the election with you, okay? You come out, and you have some drinks and support their cause, and I'm going to tell you everything you need to know about the election, okay? That will be my special talent.
All right.
Predictions that night, and we will also, just so everybody understands, we will have things there to be auctioned, but every beer, everything you drink, so don't come down. If you're feeling like, hey, I don't want to come down and write a, you know, couple $1,000 check for something, we're not asking that. Come down, have a beer.
One beer
at a time.
But
we
will take the check.
Of course we'll take
it. But you can write the check.
Because opening day, as Burl brought up, one of the things that we are auctioning off is every year I get hit up by at least 200 people asking me for a table on opening day.
This is true.
I can't believe I forgot about that. Yeah, detail that.
So it's one of the things we're going to be auctioning off is we will have 4 tickets to Reds opening day, and you will have a reserve table at the Holy Grail, which we haven't done in a long, long time. We used to do it for a couple friends. I haven't done it. So you will have a guaranteed table at the Holy Grail. You will have tickets to the game, and I will be buying your drinks that day.
I have never seen an auction item like that, and I go to a lot of charity galas.
That's the kick-ass auction item of the night.
Yeah.
Among many.
On behalf of everyone that will help. Thank you.
That should be kind of fun and cool.
Well, we'll see you there. Jeanette, thank you. Jim,
thank you.
No, thank you guys.
And I hope to see everybody on the 25th.
Thank you.